And here we are on a Saturday morning. I've recalled a number of times in the past where there were big, huge sporting events going on, and we didn't know how many people were going to show up because certain teams that were popular in this particular area were playing, and or we noticed that the mornings were okay, the evenings okay, the afternoon not so much. Because of that particular type of a situation. Not nearly as much interest in those things, I've noticed. From what I've seen, television ratings through the floor and things like that, and I understand that. I have personally not seen a single snap of a football, an inbounds pass, or a single pitch in 2020. I haven't. Now, I've scrolled through and stuff will show up and I just keep scrolling on by it. Partly because there are more important things to be working on, and also because, I don't know about the rest of you, but when professional sports and everything became fully woke earlier this year, I was just sort of like, yeah, no thanks. I'm not going to give you any more of my time. So here we are on a Saturday morning. I notice there are more men in the audience than women. I think that's because you're getting out of your chores. It's warm enough to actually be mowing grass here, which is a sad thing for you all. I don't know what that means any longer. We first moved to Arizona. We noticed a lot of people from the Midwest tried to plant lawns and things like that. That's just mean to grass in Arizona, okay? That's just showing you have no heart whatsoever. Pouring water onto this poor stuff that was never intended to actually live in that part of the world. And so my poor grandchildren have become accustomed to playing in rocks. That's what we have in our yard is gravel. It's nice looking gravel, and we do have a tree. My grandson climbs the tree, but it's gravel, and the only thing you have to do with that is need a lot of Roundup for a couple months. Not so much this year because it just hasn't rained. Not even weeds can survive if there's simply nothing falling from the sky, and that's just the way it's been there for quite some time. So. Anyway, it's good to be with you on a Saturday morning. Our duty today, I'm going to try to do something I haven't done in the past. I'm going to try to take a brief, that word has meaning. I would like to communicate the meaning to everyone. Brief is like 5 minutes. A brief break at the hour, especially because a bunch of you, for example, hold up the size of that QT cup you're holding. Okay, now the human bladder is not meant to be able to contain that volume, and therefore, those of you nursing the QT coffee, as someone who's traveling with me, who I won't mention publicly, is doing right now, you'll be appreciative of that particular break at the halfway mark, and then we wrap up. We have a couple of hours for lunch. Was I correct that there's something going on here this afternoon? At 2? But that's when we're starting. Barbecue of me? But no, there's nothing going on. Oh, so okay. So I was misled last evening. So between noon and 2, there will be an opportunity to, we used to invade local restaurants and things like that and drive the poor servers crazy, but there's plenty of places to eat nearby or drive-thrus, if that's your preference. Then the afternoon torture time, 2 to 4 p.m., I'm never offended when I see people falling over one direction or the other. The only thing I'm offended by is snoring. Okay, that is the one thing that is very distracting while I'm trying to not fall asleep myself, is if someone else is actually enjoying it so much that they're snoring. So that has happened to me. It was it was tough. It was, as a public speaker, when you have a guy right about there who about 10 minutes into your presentation just starts cutting down the entire Sequoia forest. And everyone in the room, that's all they're hearing. I could have been standing up there spewing the greatest heresy in the world and no one would ever have caught any of it because that's all you could hear. And every once in a while I'd come over a little, and I'd sort of, and then the Bible says, and there'd be a little brief pause and then right back to it. It was a complete and total disaster. Anyway, so if you do that, I will get out the laser from my backpack. I have a laser in there that will burn through your retina, and even if your eyes are closed. And so I will deal with it in that particular fashion. And then this evening, we wrap up. So what in the world are we going to be trying to be doing during the course of this day? Now, let me just ask real quickly, how many of you were not here last evening? Oh, okay. So let's start from where we were last night. Okay, that's a fair number of folks. And so those of you who were here, if you would allow me just a few moments to, in essence, remind all of us and to bring other people up to speed. Basically, what we did for an hour and a half, almost 2 hours last evening, is we all recognized together the fact that we are facing a rapidly changing world, and that anyone who holds to the Christian worldview cannot help but recognize the challenges that are coming our direction. And by the way, if you're right out at the edge of a pew, if there's some space in between, you could move in a little bit. We've got a few folks coming in, and either that or just let them step on your toes. One of the two, whichever is better for you. And the fact that we are doing the same topic 2 years in a row is indicative of the fact of how much has changed in the course of this past year. And we are all aware of the fact that there is going to be an acceleration of these changes given whatever happens in the future. I just saw this morning, actually, that the United States Supreme Court has placed on its docket one of the Georgia election lawsuits. And so, who knows? That's one of the issues, is who knows? We've never lived through any kind of situation like the one that we're living through now. And so there's great uncertainty, but we are also well aware of the fact that no matter what happens in regards to the election, January 21st, et cetera, the entire global community is on a track that is rapidly moving toward things that are extremely concerning to any Christian who believes that the Bible is the Word of God and that Jesus Christ is Lord, and that therefore for true human flourishing to take place, I'm not sure what was going on there, but for true human flourishing to take place, that much is happening in our world today that is extremely detrimental to that. We have massive crashes in populations in certain areas, and so the Japanese culture is going to disappear over time because they're just not replacing themselves. And the entire revolution in, especially in Europe and in the United States, Australia, in regards to human sexuality, male, female, marriage, transgenderism, everything that is associated therewith. And, of course, the rise of states that believe that they have the right to determine not only the safety of your children, but what your children are taught at home. And what you say to them around the dinner table, if you even say anything to your children around the dinner table. These kinds of issues are entering into all of our thinking. We are seeing people, we are seeing churches being shut down, not just because of the COVID issue, but also because of what they're saying and how they're saying it and the content of speech. And we're seeing censorship all across social media, which is how many of us communicate now. I remember very, very, very well the first day I put something called a pager on my belt. Now, some of you young folks are going, what is that? And you honestly don't know. But it was a big thing to be able to be driving down the road and all of a sudden, and you start looking for a phone booth. Yes, you find a phone booth and you have change in your car and you put money into this box and you do this or you do this. Remember that? Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And some of you young folks just are going, what is this guy talking about? I remember that well. And the developments that have taken place since then, we communicate in a particular fashion, and censorship and control over those things. There are banks, for example, today who will not do business with people that are not politically correct. They refuse to allow you to open an account, or PayPal has shut down a number of people. They will no longer allow them to use their services to receive donations or things like that because they're saying things they're not supposed to say. We are moving rapidly toward totalitarianism, and a lot of people don't even know what totalitarianism is, but we're moving toward it very, very quickly. And how are we as Christians supposed to interact with all this? And then, of course, this past year, we saw the eventual result of what's called the woke church. What does it mean to be woke? And if you subscribe to certain major Christian websites, their social media, etc., then you know, for example, if you followed something that used to be as conservative as the Gospel Coalition. Many people have gone to the Gospel Coalition meetings and have been very appreciative of what has been written there for many, many years. And there are still lots of people that write for it that are relatively conservative in what they say. But there is a very clear bent now on their part, on the ERLC. Do we have any Southern Baptists with us? Any Southern Baptists? Okay. I'm noticing it's more like, no, it used to be, and now it's, that says something right there. The Southern Baptist ERLC, for example, is supposed to be about religious rights and liberty and things like that. Very clearly, its leadership is very much dedicated to a particular perspective and a promotion of a particular perspective. These types of things are happening all around us. We want to know why. What is going on? Why is this kind of thing happening? How can we interact with it? How can we not be just total reactionaries and just simply believe everything that's thrown at us? There needs to be some level of critical thought, but at the same time, especially today, we are also dealing with a whole new thing that I think is new to most pastors, and that is we have a general media-produced level of panic in our society. Panic's not a good thing. Panic is not a Christian attribute. Panic is the exact opposite of what Christians should be. When Christians are faced with tremendous danger, panic should not be the first thing that we go to. But unfortunately, because of the massive exposure that we now have through cable television, the internet, etc., it is very possible to panic an entire population, and a panicked people will do whatever they're told to do by authorities that promise them safety and freedom. Freedom from what's scaring them, not freedom and liberty in the long run. Our experience is pretty universal. Once you give power to a governmental agency, it is loath to give it up. And this has been the reality for a very, very long time. How do we deal with all these things? There are many Christians who believe that the Christian worldview doesn't have anything to say to that. That the Christian worldview has nothing to say, that, that the Christian worldview is apolitical. All right. If you believe that politics never touches upon what God speaks to in this world, the nature of justice, the nature of truth, how we are supposed to interact with each other as human beings, what is best for human beings in regards to marriage and family. If you believe that those are two completely separate realms, and there are people who do believe that, I'm recognizing that, then you might be able to come up with a theoretical way of keeping these two things separate. The problem is that from the very beginning, the church has recognized the complication that exists in her relationship to the state. Ask the Apostle Paul. The last we know of him, he is in prison. Now, theoretically, there's tradition that he actually was released for a time, went to Spain, and then was arrested again and executed, and then other traditions say no. Once he wrote 2 Timothy, that was pretty much it. But we don't know. He disappears from history. But why does he disappear from history? It wasn't the Jews that got him. They tried, but it wasn't the Jews that got him. It was the Roman state. And starting with Nero, who started off okay, by the way. Nero was a fairly stable dude for the first few years of his reign, then went on a level of evil that I'm not sure has been paralleled. Stalin comes close, but the perverse evil of Nero was sort of hard to explain. It's hard to explain outside of like demon possession, quite honestly. Mark 5 and the Gadarene demoniac level type evil. I mean, he completely lost it. But there starts with Nero a recognition on the part of the Roman state that this Christian movement is a threat to us. Why? This is very important. Some of you who listen to Divine Line, you've heard some of this before, but this is really, really important. Why was that so? Because think about what Rome was, and think about what people want to do today globally. What's the challenge for the World Economic Forum today and people like Klaus Schwab to bring into existence what they're calling the Great Reset? And they're open about this. This isn't, you're hearing people tell you that this is like a conspiracy theory or something. Look, when Klaus Schwab publishes a book in June or July of this year called COVID-19 and the Great Reset, that's not much of a conspiracy. When you put it on Amazon, that's not a conspiracy. You're being straight out front. You're putting this stuff out there. You're making videos. This is what we envision for the future. This is the only way that mankind's really going to be able to survive and flourish, is a massive, centralized, technology-based, full observation of every citizen government. And that's what the CCP is. That's what the Chinese Communist Party is. You do know, everybody knows, that when you go into a grocery store in China, there are cameras in every aisle, right? You all know this? How many of you are not aware of, let me tell you. Here's what happened. There's cameras in every aisle. And everything you buy is monitored. So how many of you have heard of the social credit score? How many of you have not heard of the social credit score? All right, this is what's coming. All right, this is already being established. In China, you have a social credit score. Your social credit score determines what kind of jobs you can have, what kind of houses you can live in, how much travel you can do, how far you can travel, everything. Your social credit score is everything. And so when you go into a store and you're walking down the aisle with your cart and you're buying things, if you're a mom, if you're a female and you buy diapers and the computer system knows you have kids, that's good. That's okay. You need to buy diapers for your kids. And you can buy a bottle of wine, but if you buy 3 bottles of wine, that's not good. And so you are given a score for what you buy based upon what the government determines you should like and dislike. Okay? Sounds pretty creepy, doesn't it? Yes. They're following you everywhere. Facial recognition software. They're now working for on facial recognition software that can work while you're wearing a mask, of course. Why would they not be doing that? And so you get this score because the government is monitoring everywhere you go, everything you do, every activity, and they're assigning relative values. So how do you trash your social credit score? Best way to do it, go to church. Go to church. Now, there are state-approved churches, and then there are not state-approved churches. And the non-state-approved churches, especially the big ones, they've been dynamiting them for a decade. They've been blowing them up. Now they're just going in and arresting everybody. You've all heard of the pastor who boldly spoke to the Chinese government and said, look, we are told that if when you are rewarding good and punishing evil, Romans 13, we are to be in obedience to you. We will be the best citizens you will have in regards to obeying the law and things like that. But you must understand, you are under the lordship of Christ. And you have a duty to actually promote his worship. And you will be judged someday standing before Christ. He is now serving 9 years. Nobody knows even where any longer. And that was just recently. So this social credit stuff, the complete observation of everyone, and then using the government to say, this is what's good and this is what's bad, that's how you control people in this situation. And that's what the World Economic Forum is talking about. That's what Klaus Schwab is talking about. None of this is, this is not a conspiracy theory. This is out in the open. This is what's going on right now. And the people who want to bring this to the United States are Bill Gates and his ilk. And guess what? Old Bill's got some money, and you and I gave it to him. You and I gave it to him, and we continue to give it to him. And so they've got all the money in the world, and their utopian idea is this idea, there's no private property. That's what the Great Reset is. You will not have any private property. They're already written up. You can look it up this came out in Canada just recently. You watch within the next 5 years, there will be a situation where you'll be offered complete forgiveness of all of your debts in return for signing everything you own over the government. And so you become the serf, and the government's the lord. They provide for you free health care, which means free. Exactly what is that supposed to mean? I gave everything for this. That sort of means it's not free. You work for the government, and the government provides you what you need. If you've heard about this utopia before, the guy who promoted it was a guy named Karl Marx. And this was tried before. But the idea now with China is smart. They've figured this out. You know what they're doing? They're making sure that they don't make the mistake the Soviets made. Because everybody was starving to death. And people got tired of the gruel, you know? You had all the money in the world, but nothing to buy. There's nothing in the stores. That's not the case in China. They have allowed enough free market. They know there needs to be enough free market for stuff to flow, for stuff to be made. So what they're doing is they're trying to make sure that their people are happy with having their felt needs met, and that keeps them from rebelling. Now, there are still those few people who recognize, but I'm still being told what I can wear, where I can go, what I can think, the whole nine yards, and that's not much of a human life. But for most people, if you can get your physical desires and lusts satisfied, you got enough food, you can play your online video games, hey, that's good enough. We're good. That's all right. I can guarantee you the founders of this country would have found that to be a rather disgusting solution. But that's another issue. I think most people today find the founders of this country to have been disgusting themselves. That's the problem of what we're facing right now. So there's a whole worldview behind that utopian idea. And it's a worldview that ignores Romans 1. It's a worldview that ignores what Christians believe. Now, quote-unquote liberal Christians, they're not much of a problem. Liberal Christians bought into a humanistic view of mankind a long time ago, and they ignore the reality that Scripture says man is constantly suppressing the knowledge of God. There is no fear of God before their eyes. I mean, you read Romans chapter 3, verses 10 through 18 or so, and that's not exactly the most uplifting section of Scripture to read, except for one reason. It happens to be true. It happens to be true in every culture and at every time. And since it is, the idea, and let's be honest, I'll go ahead and skewer my sci-fi because it was a part of this. That's always been the huge fiction of Star Trek. The whole vision of Star Trek was that all of a sudden everybody, nobody has money, and everyone's just all equal, and we, you know, no one tries to excel at anything. We're all, you know, all equality, right? Problem is, that ignores the reality of sin, pride, all sorts of issues like that. It ignores the fact that there are some people who are far better at things than other people. There are some people that are big and strong and tall, and then there are people who are not. And there are people who are really, really smart in certain areas, and then not really, really smart in other areas. We're all different. And by ignoring that, we can pretend we can create this utopian society, but that utopian society will fundamentally have to, as we mentioned last evening, get rid of any elements from God's truth and God's law that limit the power of the state and that recognize cosmic justice will be done by God, that we will be judged. The things written in the books, that God is keeping a perfect accounting and God knows the heart and the judge of all the earth will do right, this perspective gets rid of all of that. And the result, right now, we would call what's going on, for example, through the use of Google and Twitter and Facebook, a soft totalitarianism. And that is, if you, you know, like, I say very, 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 very plainly that transgenderism is a horrific anti-human evil. It's deception. There is no such thing as transitioning. No one has ever done it. No one ever can. God created man, male, and female. You can mutilate the body, you can dress it up on the outside. But I have children. And I remember clearly when those babies were born, both of ours were born very early. For some reason, you all can ask Kelly about it since she's with me, but she has skipped that last month of pregnancy. I'm not sure how you do that, but it's just like, yeah, that last month, that's a little bit long. And so we had little ones, and especially our son was very small. And I remember very, very plainly her nursing that tiny, tiny little child. And so I refuse to look at the head of the health department for Pennsylvania, who's a 60-some-year-old dude in a wig, and call that a woman. I know what a woman is. A woman nursed my children, and a woman gave birth to my children. And you're not going to tell me that that dude is a woman. That's living a lie. I can't do that, and I won't do that. And it is absolutely a disrespect to every woman to do that, and vice versa, and vice versa. So these kinds of, these are issues that, as a Christian, I don't have any choice. God has spoken. God has said, this is male and female. God has given revelation concerning these things. And when a government system comes along and says, no, we can't do that, you can't say that anymore, they will shut you down. So we have a soft totalitarianism right now. I mean, how many people today could go into any major corporation in the United States and openly on a company email list say what I just said about men and women? It's not going to happen. You're gone. You're done. Doesn't matter what your position is. Your history, and we all know it. So there's already a soft totalitarianism that exists. It's already amongst us. And you might say, how did we allow that to happen? It's doing it slowly. It was happening for a long, long time, and now what we're seeing is the rapid acceleration of it because they figure, hey, we've got it. We have the positions of authority now. We can go ahead and do it. So there you go. And the result of that, as I mentioned last night, are specific, direct legislative initiatives in almost all Western countries. It's in the United States called the Equality Act. In Australia, they've got a new one coming out that will be voted on soon that will fundamentally make it a criminal act for the pastor of this church to stand behind this sacred desk and open up Leviticus 18, 19, and 20 and preach what it says consistently, historically, and fully. It will be a criminal act to do that in Australia. And it pretty much already is across the EU, depending on which judge you run into. And it's accelerating. Where is this coming from? Well, we mentioned last night the myth of neutrality. There is no such thing as neutrality. We, the church, have allowed much of this to happen in our own thinking because we have embraced the myth of neutrality. We have embraced the idea that there are things in this world that are not under the sovereign command of Christ. We have on the one hand confessed theologically that Jesus Christ created all things, but on the other side, we then separate that out and say that all things can exist in a neutral relationship to the Creator. That's not true. Every fact that is a fact because Jesus made it a fact. Didn't hear any amens on that. Yeah, if you have to ask for it, it's a little... But the reason I say that is because that, in our society, is dogmatic heresy. It is dogmatic heresy for us in our society to say what I just said because that's not inclusive. And inclusivity is, of course, the great dogma of our society, is it not? Except it doesn't mean inclusive. Last night, someone was saying, you need to give us more examples of words that are being changed in their meaning and the war on language. Well, there's one of the great ones right there. You are to be exclusively inclusive, right? And neither of those two words mean what they used to mean. I mean, there's a dictionary definition, but hey, last month, Merriam's changed the definition of man. So hold on to your old paper dictionaries, by the way. Don't throw them out. If you already have, go find some. There's the folks at the used bookstores would be happy to have you coming in. They could use the business right now. Grab some of your old dictionaries because, yes, language always changes. But normally it changes as a natural development over time. This isn't a natural development over time. This is an all-out assault on what made Western culture the most freedom-giving culture that mankind has ever developed. And what's coming is not a free culture. So you've got to get rid of that. You've got to demonize that in people's minds, so you attack the language. So, inclusion, exclusivity. You don't want to be exclusive. But the Christian message is that God, there is one God, that's the first problem. The Romans hated that. They had made peace with the Jews because the Jews were not proselytizers. So the Jews weren't running, the Jews weren't going to the local temple and standing outside and passing out Jewish tracts. Okay? They weren't doing that. And so the Romans had made peace with the Jews and their exclusive religion, even though the Romans considered it rather disgusting. They really viewed Judaism as a disgusting, repulsive religion, primarily because of the exclusivity. They said, our God is the only God. And all these other gods, which the economy of many of the cities depended upon, all those other gods are false gods. And so they found that horrific. The Christians come along, and at first the Romans can't tell the difference because they're using the same scriptures, right? So they just figure it's a difference between Jews. And eventually they start getting the idea, oh, this Jesus guy is the issue with these folks. And these folks are literally going and they're telling our people that there's not only just one God, but that he has revealed himself exclusively in this Jesus, and the only way of salvation is in and through him, and that you can't join that with the worshiping of our gods in the temples. That's disgusting. You people are backwards, you're bigoted, you're biased, you're prejudiced, you're Neanderthals. Christianity was just, the elites considered it to be absolutely disgusting. Sound familiar? It's happening again. It's happening again. Because see, Rome is trying to hold together all these different cultures and all these different religions. And it's tough to do. And you don't want to have Roman legions on every corner just to try to keep everybody together. You want to have a way of letting everybody get along and still do their thing. They realize if we come through and tell everybody they can't practice their ancient religions, we will have civil war and just constant rebellion, and that's not going to happen. And so they develop the idea, okay, here's what we'll do. You can continue to worship your gods, and you can keep your temples open, and you can do your thing, and that's fine, and that's wonderful. But what you also need to do is you need to recognize Caesar. So become syncretistic. Go ahead and worship your God. Go ahead and think that your God is giving you your crops and your plants and all the rest of that stuff. That's fine. But you need to do something like every year where you tip your hat to Caesar. And see, that'll give us unity, you see. Everybody doing the same thing will give us enough unity that we can sort of hold this unity, diversity thing together. And so eventually what you have is the offering of a pinch of incense on the altar to Caesar. And so what you would eventually have to do, we're not sure exactly when it developed, and it probably developed in one area and then moved to other areas and waxed and waned, and it became especially necessary in the 3rd century, but it's happening earlier than that, where you take a pinch of incense and you have this little altar with some fire in it, and you take the incense, and when you put the incense on the fire, it flames up, and you know it's supposed to smell nice. I don't know what it smelled like, but you can still buy incense today that smells nice. And you flame it up, and as you do it, you say, Kaiser Kurios. Kaiser Kurios. Caesar is Lord. Now, you could also say that whatever ancestral god you have is also Lord. But you had to say Caesar is Lord. Now, the Jews had already found a way around that. They had already made their peace with Rome. They didn't have to do that. Along come the Christians. And the Christians are saying, nah, there's only one way. There's only one way. There's only God has acted decisively in Jesus Christ. He's the God-man. God has entered into our own creation. And in grace has provided this tremendous means of peace with himself. And so what was the Christian confession? Jesus Kurios. Jesus is Lord. You can't say Jesus Kurios and Kaiser Kurios at the same time. It's not possible. And so you have the church-state conflict. And this is seen in the New Testament. This is seen through Acts. This is seen when you have to ask the question. Peter, I told the story recently. Remember what happens in Acts chapter 13? When Peter, Herod kills James and so sees the Jews like that, and so he arrests Peter, and he's gonna off Peter. And Peter is in prison, and the angel shows up, and the chains fall off, and the doors open of their own, and Peter thinks he's asleep, he thinks he's dreaming. I mean, that's the kind of dream you would have if you're in prison, isn't it? You know, it's like, nah, I'm out of here. And the angel takes him out the street, and then the angel disappears. Now, some people would tell us that the way to interpret Romans chapter 13 means that Peter should have said, thank you, Mr. Angel, but I need to obey the governing authorities, and went back into the prison. Right? There are some people that are saying that. They seem to miss the fact that in Romans chapter 13, The government being spoken of is a government that does what? Punishes evildoers and rewards those who do good. Yeah, we'll keep that in mind. We'll get back to that. What does Peter do? He escapes. Remember, he goes to where the Christians are gathered, and the little girl Rhoda, you know, he knocks on the door, and when she recognizes who it is, what does she do? She leaves him out there. Goes in, Peter's at the door. And they're like, nah, it's just Peter's spirit. It's Peter. No, he, and they're like, they hear the knocking, and Paul and Peter's still standing out there knocking. And they finally let him in. And what does he do? Does he go turn himself back in? No, he leaves. He tells, go tell James and the brethren, I've been freed. And he goes someplace else. And what happens to the guards who were supernaturally deprived of their prisoner? They're all executed. They're executed. You go, that hardly seems fair. Really? They were enforcing unrighteousness and imprisoning a righteous man, and they would have gladly been involved in his execution. You telling me that they were somehow innocent? We didn't buy that at Nuremberg. Y'all know what Nuremberg was, right? I was about to ask, how many of you don't know what Nuremberg is? And I said, I'm not going to ask that question. The Nuremberg trials after World War II. Interestingly, it only happened in Germany. You notice that? Didn't happen in Japan. We knew we needed Japan. And so almost every single one of the Japanese war criminals, and there were more of them than there were Germans, believe it or not, were never prosecuted. I think that's actually part of why Japan never recovered from World War II. There was never any reckoning for what actually took place. The rape of Nanking, what they did to the Chinese was unbelievable. I think that would have actually helped, but it didn't. It didn't happen. And we're guilty for that ourselves. But at Nuremberg, when you had guards at Auschwitz who said, I was just doing my job, man. I was just doing what I was told. We didn't buy it. They were executed. To this day, we're still taking people into custody who are 96, 97 years old when it's discovered that they were guards at Auschwitz or someplace like that. To this day, we're still doing it. Tells you a little something about the built-in idea of what justice actually is in our minds. Anyway, the point is, to hold all this stuff together, very quickly it became clear, since these Christians won't offer the pinch of incense, they need to die. And they started dying. Nero would take Christians, wrap them in animal skins, and release them to animals to be gored and eaten and torn apart. He'd wrap them in pitch and tie them to stakes, light them on fire while still alive, and use their burning bodies to light his garden parties so his guests could walk along and bits and pieces of body parts are falling amongst them and rolling around on fire. Nero thought that was cool. I told you Nero was, the things that Nero did are really not even discussable in public when you really want to get down to the details of it. But it started there, but it wasn't empire-wide yet. But there would be periods of time, many, many, the stories of the martyrs in 180 in Lyon. Women, pregnant women, torn apart by beasts for the entertainment of the crowds. This was what, and then finally, in the middle of the third century, it's decided Rome is falling because of the Christians. And so from 250 to 313, for over 60 years, almost as long as the Soviet Empire stood, for over 60 years, the entire combined might of the Roman Empire was focused upon the destruction of the Christian cult. And during that time, Cyprian, Bishop of Carthage, is martyred. He's beheaded. Many, many Christians lost their lives. Many were driven into exile and hiding. Churches destroyed until 313, the peace of the church, Constantine's conversion. It's a whole other story which we won't get into right now. What's the point? There was a conflict. There was a conflict. And the church recognized that there were certain things the church could not do. and that the claims of Christ had greater authority than the claims of Caesar. That Caesar would not always be around. And guess what? Anyone met Caesar recently? Well, not the Roman one. There is a Caesar in our day. And one of our greatest challenges is for you and I to understand when our society is now saying to us, offer the pinch of incense. Say Kaiser Kurios. They're passing around a card at work, and they want you to sign it. And it's for the regional manager, who is a man marrying another man. They want you to sign it. Congratulations! Congratulations on your marriage. You know, that's happening all the time, right? It's happening right now. It's been happening for, well, since at least 2015. The Obergefell joke. And it was a joke. How many of you have read the actual Supreme Court decision of Obergefell? Two of us. That was the most infantile thing I've ever read in my life, wasn't it? Painful. Justice Kennedy wrote that. It was like it was written by a sixth grader. All just warm, fuzzy feeling. We don't want anybody to feel hurt. It was absurd. But it's now law of the land. And because of that, when they pass that card around, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Because you know if you don't sign it, you might as well start packing the stuff in your desk. Right? Now, you could sign it, repent, but then you won't be given time to pack the stuff in your desk. Right? That would be one option. But we all know that I'm speaking the truth here. We all know this is not a conspiracy theory. This is not craziness. This is what's happening right now. And is that not Kaiser Kurios? Because who's defining marriage now? Caesar or Christ? Caesar is, and Caesar's telling you, you need to agree with me. You need to celebrate what I tell you to celebrate. Are there areas where Christians could disagree as to exactly what the pinch of incense is? Yes, I realize that. But there are some that are really obvious. And here's the danger. You and I want to make accommodation every way we can because we are so connected to the things of this world. Why would almost any Christian do that? Because I've got a mortgage, man. And my first kid's in college. You know what that costs? I know. There you go. That's what we were talking about last night. So we're pretty much up to speed, but that does give you just one example of the war on language. Exclusive, inclusive. We all know now that to use that word had a meaning in the year 2000. And we understood what it was, and we understood that Christ makes exclusive claims. He says that he is one with the Father. He says that he is the way, the truth, the life. No one comes to the Father except by him. No other name given amongst men whereby a man may be saved. Those are all exclusive claims on part of the Christian faith, and we embraced that. As much as liberals found that to be extremely repulsive. But now, we have to live in a world where inclusive is used to tell us you need to be inclusive in the old meaning of the word, while at the same time the people telling us that are using it in a completely different way to mean believe exclusively our worldview. So if you're inclusive, you're actually excluding the worldview that created Western society So you're being exclusive to be inclusive. That's the war on language. I mean, you've literally got to send somebody to university for 4 years and immerse them in this stuff to get their brain to work that way. You got to break the mind to work that way. That's why they want your children as early as possible. That's why they want your children as early as possible, because it takes a long time to get you to think in such a warped fashion. But there you go. Had another example. It happens every day. I happened to start catching up. I hadn't, while traveling, been keeping up with the briefing by Dr. Albert Mohler. And he gives examples. Pretty much every single program includes an example of where language is under attack. So this morning, I could tell he was the one that I listened to. Anyways, I haven't caught up. I've missed a few. I could tell he was quite exercised because he is an Anglophile. He loves everything British. I think he'd commute from London to Kentucky and back and forth each day if he could get away with it. I really think he would. And if you've ever seen his library, wow, that's like the eighth wonder of the unnatural world. But he was talking about, obviously, a guy that he had a lot of respect for that had written a 3-volume set on the history of England and stuff. And I guess he had accompanied Sir Edmund Hillary to the top of Mount Everest and all this stuff. And he just died at, I think, age 94. And somewhere along the line, this man, first name James, became Jan. One of the earliest, back then, transsexuals, went the whole way, the whole operation, the whole nine yards. And he was reading the New York Times obituary on this individual, and he was incensed. Because, of course, they adopt all the feminine pronouns. And so he pointed out, if you went back in history and read any of the reports of Sir Edmund Hillary's conquering of Mount Everest, you would find no evidence of someone named Jan in the expedition, because there was no one named Jan. There was a man named James. But they changed all that. They're literally doing ministry. The New York Times is the Ministry of Truth today. And when I say Ministry of Truth, I'm talking about George Orwell's 1984, where Winston sits there and he changes old newspaper entries to erase people and change things, whatever the party wants done. The New York Times is the Ministry of Truth today. And so they're talking, they literally say that this Jan was married to such and such a woman and had 5 children with her. She had 5 children with her. That's called living according to lies. Because it was a man named James that fathered 5 children with the woman who gave birth to them. But in the obituary, it's now a woman named Jan who married another woman, and somehow, magically, 5 children appeared. And we have no idea how. It's absurd. It's so absurd that you can get kicked off of Twitter. Like I said last night, if you remind anyone, you're old enough to remember like I did, that great American Olympian, Caitlyn Jenner. Right. You have to change history because reality itself is being warped. The very meanings of all words are now up for debate. So boy, girl, how many options now does Facebook offer as far as, you know, two-spirit? No one knows what any of them mean. Boy and girl, man and woman, this is the one that gets me. Husband or wife? Oh my goodness. Husband, I am so thankful I grew up knowing what a husband and a wife was. But now, husband, wife, mother, father, how many states now have birth certificates where you have progenitor 1 and progenitor 2? And maybe more spaces for other people if you just want to throw them in there for the fun of it. Fundamental basic words that give meaning to life and give parameters for the young developing mind being stolen from people right and left. And of course, key now are the issues, and we'll get to them, in regards to society, the issues of equality, equity, justice, totally being redefined outside of any objective revelation from God. Which means that the definition of 2020, to be a good definition, needs to be a definition that can be different in 2022. Right? Because if you insist on the definition of 2020 in 2022, then you're being exclusivistic. And you're not being inclusive, right? That's how you just redefine everything. Do I really need to emphasize the fact that that kind of mindset cannot possibly do anything but make hash out of this? We for a long time, we have, if you're a Bible-believing Christian, you have listened to the Liberal United Methodists, PCUSA, the Liberal Lutherans, all the people at Union Theological Seminary, and you've listened to them talking. A couple years ago, we were all chuckling when the video from the chapel at Union Theological Seminary came out. Anybody remember? It's when the big trees walked in. Remember? People dressed up as big trees. I thought I was watching which one of the Lord of the Rings ones with the Ents, you know, the throwing rocks at, and the trees walk in, and then later they're all kneeling around flowers, and they're asking the flowers to forgive them for their acts of aggression toward the natural world. And we're all sitting around doing what this guy back there is doing. Just, you know, oh, wow, the zanies are at Union Theological Seminary. Well, they've been there since the late 1800s. They've been there since the late 1800s, and we laugh. But you see, they were just simply going with what all this is in the theological realm. And they pretend to honor this as something. The Union tends to have more of a Buddhistic bent to it than a Christian bent these days, but they pretend. It's pretense. You can't make this worldview and that book meaningful together. This is the enemy of that worldview. It says all the wrong stuff. Anyone remember Brother Andrew? Anyone remember Brother Andrew? Just a few of us. Brother Andrew, back in my day, was one of those guys, hero for doing what? Smuggling Bibles into Eastern Europe. Because the Soviets knew, that book is not our friend. Oh, they already had the state church, but they knew the state church wasn't going to be actually teaching the content of that. So they didn't have to worry about it. The scary thing is when individuals get hold of that book and find out what God requires of them. That's when they become unmanageable. And so they banished it. I don't know about you, but whenever I hear people talking about an official, you know, there's like an official Chinese version of the Bible. Nah, I'll pass on that. No, thank you. I don't want the U.S. government-approved version either, I assure you of that. They got nothing to do with it. Leave it alone. You might say, that could never happen. Yes, it could. You may have it on here. Don't trust that you'll always be able to have it on here. It's wonderful. I love being able to have my entire library. That's wonderful. It's great. But I ain't getting rid of this. Aside from the fact this is a Jeffrey Rice rebind, which many of you are going, oh, let's hope it doesn't disappear from the pulpit up there during one of the breaks, right? Aside from that, I'm not giving it up. And you don't either. But even then, let's be honest, for a lot of us, how much of it could we take with us if they didn't allow us to have anything at all? Man, we should be more focused on memorizing Scripture. The more we've got, the more we'll have when everything else is taken away. Even though, remember Corey and Betsy? Corey and Betsy Ten Boom? That little Bible that God miraculously allowed them to have all the way through Ravensbrück concentration camp? There's a miracle you can believe in. There's a miracle that you can believe in. All right, I went a little bit beyond my time. Remember, the word has meaning, and we're going to demonstrate that we are not postmodern secularists by redefining the word brief. So we are going to take a brief 5-minute break, and then we will continue on.